been afraid so long she had forgotten what it was like not to be. Afraid that one day her mother would disappear again, that her father would crumble, that their whole family would collapse once more. Ever since that summer without her mother, their family had felt precarious, as if they were teetering on a cliff. Before that, she hadn't realized how fragile happiness was, how, if you were careless, you could knock it over and shatter it. Anything her mother wanted, she had promised, as long as she would stay. She had been so afraid. So every time her mother said, "Do you want?" she had said yes. She knew what her parents had longed for, without them saying a word, and she had wanted them happy. She had kept her promise, and her mother had stayed. "Read this book. Yes. Want this. Love this. Yes." Once, at the college museum, while Nath had pouted about missing the star show, she had spotted a nugget of amber with a fly trapped inside. "That's 4 million years old," Marilyn whispered, wrapping her arms around her daughter from behind. Lydia had stared until Nath at last had dragged them both away. Now she thought of the fly landing daintily in the pool of resin. Perhaps it had mistaken it for honey. Perhaps it hadn't seen the puddle at all. By the time it had realized its mistake, it was too late. It had flailed, and then it had sunk, and then it had drowned. Ever since that summer, she had been so afraid of losing her mother, of losing her father, and after a while, the biggest fear of all, of losing Nath, the only one who understood the strange and brittle balance in their family, who knew all that had happened, who had always kept her afloat. That long ago day, sitting in this very spot on the dock, she had already begun to feel it. How hard it would be to inherit their parents' dreams. How suffocating to be so loved. She had felt Nath's hands on her shoulders and been almost grateful to fall forward, to let herself sink. Then, when her head had plunged beneath the surface, the water was like a slap. She had tried to scream and coldness slid down her throat, choking her. She'd stretched out her toes looking for ground, and there wasn't any. Nothing when she reached out her arms. Only wetness and cold. Then, warmth. Nath's fingers. Nath's hand. Nath's arm. Nath pulling her back up and her head coming up out of the lake. Water dripping out of her hair into her eyes and her eyes stinging. "Kick," Nath had told her. His hands held her up, surprising her with their strength, their sureness. And she had felt warm all over. His fingers caught hers, and right then she had stopped being afraid. "Kick your legs. I've got you. Kick!" It had been the same ever since. "Don't let me sink," she had thought as she reached for his hand, and he had promised not to when he took it. This moment, Lydia thought. This is where it all went wrong. It was not too late. There, on the dock, Lydia made a new set of promises, this time to herself. She will begin again. She will tell her mother enough. She will take down the posters and put away the books. If she fails physics, if she never becomes a doctor, it will be all right. She will tell her mother that. And she will tell her mother, too, it's not too late. For anything. She will give her father back his necklace and his book. She will stop holding the silent phone to her ear. She will stop pretending to be someone she is not. From now on, she will do what she wants. Feet planted firmly on nothing. Lydia, so long enthralled by the dreams of others, could not yet imagine what that might be. But suddenly the universe glittered with possibilities. She will change everything. She will tell Jack she's sorry, that she'll never tell his secret. If he can be brave, so sure of who he is and what he wants, perhaps she can, too. She'll tell him that she understands. And Nath. She will tell him that it's all right for him to leave, that she will be fine, that he's not responsible for her anymore, that he doesn't need to worry. And then she will let him go. And as she made this last promise, Lydia understood what to do, how to start everything over again, from the beginning, so she would never again be afraid to be alone. What she must do to seal her promises, to make them real. Gently, she lowered herself into the rowboat and loosed the rope. As she pushed away from the dock, she expected a surge of panic. It didn't come. Even once she had rowed, stroke by clumsy stroke, out onto the lake, far enough that the lamppost was just a dot, too small to contaminate the darkness around her, she felt strangely calm and confident. Above her, the moon was coin round, sharp and perfect. Beneath her, the boat rocked so gently that she could hardly feel its motion. Looking up at the sky, she felt as if she were floating in space, completely untethered. She could not believe that anything was impossible. In the distance, the light from the dock shone like a star. If she squinted, she could just make out the dim shape of the dock itself, the pale line of boards against the darker night. When she got a little closer, she thought, she would be able to see it perfectly. The boards worn smooth by generations of bare feet. The posts that held them up just above the surface of the water. Carefully, she got to her feet, spreading her arms as the boat swayed. It was not so far. She could do this. She was certain. All she had to do was kick. She would kick her way to the dock and reach up to the planks and pull herself up out of the water. Tomorrow morning she would ask Nath about Harvard, what it was like there. She would ask him about the people he met, the classes he would take. She would tell him he'd have a wonderful time. She looked down at the lake, which in the dark looked like nothing, just blackness, a great void spreading beneath her. "It will be all right," she told herself, and she stepped out of the boat into the water. 12. All the way home, James thinks to himself, "It is not too late. It is not too late." With each mile marker, he repeats it until he is back in Middlewood, the college, and then the lake whipping by. When at last he pulls into their driveway, the garage door is open, and Marilyn's car nowhere in sight. Each breath sways him, no matter how hard he tries to keep upright. All these years, he has remembered only, "She ran away." He has taken this for granted. She came back. And she stayed. As he reaches for the front doorknob, his legs wobble. "It is not too late," he assures himself. But inside, he quavers. He cannot blame her if she has gone away again. This time for good. In the front hall, a heavy silence greets him, like that of a funeral. And he steps into the living room and sees a small figure huddled on the floor. Hannah, curled in a ball, hugging herself with both arms, eyes a watery red. He remembers suddenly a long-ago afternoon, two motherless children on a cold doorstep. "Hannah," he whispers, even as he feels himself collapsing like an old building grown too weak to stand. His bag drops from his fingers to the floor. It's as if he's breathing through a straw.
Where's your mother?
Anna looks up. Upstairs. Sleeping. Then, and this is what gives James his breath again, I told her you would come home. Not smugly, not triumphantly, just a fact, round and simple as a bead. James sinks to the carpet beside his small daughter, silenced by gratitude, and Hannah considers whether to say more. For there is more, much more. How she and her mother had curled up together on Lydia's bed and cried all afternoon, holding each other so close that their tears mixed until her mother had fallen asleep. And how, half an hour ago, her brother had arrived home in a police car, rumpled and groggy and stinking to high heaven, but strangely serene, and had gone straight up to his room and into bed. Anna, peeking from behind the curtain, had seen Officer Fisk at the wheel. And late that night, Marilyn's car will quietly reappear in the driveway, washed, keys set neatly on the driver's seat. It can wait, she decides. She is used to keeping people's secrets, and there is something more pressing to tell her father. She tugs at his arm, pointing upward, and James is surprised by how small her hands are and how strong. Look! At first, so overcome with relief, so accustomed to ignoring his youngest, he sees nothing. It is not too late, he thinks, glancing up at the ceiling, clean and bright as a new sheet of paper in the late afternoon sun. Not yet the end. Look! Hannah insists again, tipping his head with a peremptory hand. She has never dared to be so bossy. And James, startled, looks carefully and sees it at last. A white footprint against the off-white, as if someone has stepped in paint and then onto the ceiling, leaving one faint but perfect track. He has never noticed it before. Anna catches his eye, and the look on her face is serious and proud, as if she's discovered a new planet. It's ridiculous, really, a footprint on the ceiling. Unexplainable and pointless and magical. Anna giggles, and to James it sounds like the tinkling of a bell. A good sound. He laughs too, for the first time in weeks. And Hannah, suddenly bold, nestles close to her father. It feels familiar, the way she melts into him. It reminds him of something he's forgotten. You know what I'd do with your sister sometimes? He says slowly. When she was small, really small, even smaller than you. You know what I'd do? He lets Hannah climb onto his back. Then he stands and turns side to side, feeling her weight shift against him. Where's Lydia? He says. Where's Lydia? He'd say this over and over while she nestled her face in his hair and giggled. He could feel her hot little breath on his scalp, on the back of his ears. He'd wander the living room, peering behind furniture and around doorways. I can hear her, he'd say. I can see her foot. He'd squeeze her ankle, clutched tight in his hand. Where is she? Where's Lydia? Where could she be? He would twist his head and she'd duck, squealing, while he pretended not to notice her hair dangling over his shoulder. There she is! There's Lydia! He'd spin faster and faster, Lydia clinging tighter and tighter until he collapsed on the rug, letting her roll, laughing, off his back. She never got tired of it. Found and lost and found again, lost in plain sight, pressed to his back, her feet clasped in his hands. What made something precious? losing it and finding it. All those times he'd pretended to lose her. He sinks down on the carpet, dizzy with loss. And he feels small arms curling round his neck, the warmth of a small body leaning against him.
"Daddy," Anna whispers, "will you do that again?"
And he feels himself rising, pushing himself back up to his knees. There is so much more to do, so much yet to be mended. But for now, he thinks only of this, his daughter, here in his arms. He had forgotten what it was like to hold a child, to hold anyone like that, how their weight sank into you, how they clung instinctively, how they trusted you. It is a long time before he is ready to let her go. And when Marilyn wakes and comes downstairs, just as the light is fading, this is what she finds. Her husband cradling their youngest in a circle of lamplight, a tender look of calm on his face.
"You're home," Marilyn says.
All of them know it is a question.
"I'm home," James says,
and Hannah rises on tiptoes, edging toward the door. She can feel the room is poised on the edge of what, she's not sure, but she does not want to destroy this beautiful, sensitive balance. Accustomed to being overlooked, she sidles toward her mother, ready to slip by unnoticed. Then Marilyn touches a gentle hand to her shoulder, and Hannah's heels land on the floor with a surprised thump.
"It's all right," Marilyn says. "Your father and I just need to talk."
Then, and Hannah flushes with delight, she kisses her on the head, right where the hair parts, and says,
"We'll see you in the morning."
Halfway up the steps, Hannah pauses. From downstairs, she hears only a low murmur of voices. But for once, she does not creep back down to listen.
"We'll see you in the morning," her mother had said, and she takes this as a promise.
She tiptoes across the landing, past Nath's room where behind the closed door her brother lies in a dreamless sleep, the remnants of the whiskey slowly steaming from his pores. Past Lydia's room, which looks in the dark like nothing has changed, though nothing could be further from the truth. All the way up to her own room, where through the windows the lawn outside is just beginning to turn from inky blue to black. Her glow-in-the-dark clock reads just past 8, but it feels later, like the middle of the night, the darkness quiet and thick as a down comforter. She wraps that feeling around her. From up here, she can't hear her parents talking, but it's enough to know that they're there. Downstairs, Marilyn lingers in the doorway, one hand on the jamb. James tries to swallow, but something hard and sharp lodges in his throat like a fishbone. Once he had been able to read his wife's mood even from her back, by the tilt of her shoulders, by the shifting of her weight from left foot to right, he would have known what she was thinking. But it's been a long time since he looked at her carefully, and now, even face to face, all he can see are the faint wrinkles at the corners of her eyes. The faint wrinkles where her blouse has been crushed, then straightened.
"I thought you'd gone," she says at last.
When James's voice squeezes around the sharp thing in his throat, it comes out thin and scratched.
"I thought you had."
And for the moment, this is everything they need to say. Some things they will never discuss. James will never talk to Louisa again,
and he will be